Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Donald Trump's taxes. It seems like an eon ago, but the subject of the former president's taxes was, at one point, both a key campaign issue and a strange political mystery. Something that, for years, had people wondering, what might tax returns reveal about how Trump makes his money and where that money goes? Trump's refusal to release those documents in 2016 bucked tradition. To that point, every president since Richard Nixon, who was, like Trump, a Republican, had released their tax information. And Kamala Harris, now running against Trump to become the 47th U.S. president, released her personal tax returns earlier this summer. But Trump's tax documents? 6 days out from election 2024, there is again no sign of them. And while voters are mulling many important issues, Trump's unreleased tax returns don't seem to be topping people's priority lists. But for one St. Louis native, Charles Chaz Littlejohn, Donald Trump's taxes changed his life.
It's May 1st, 2024. At 2 p.m., I will be reporting to the camp at USP Marion to begin my five-year sentence. I've been here in St. Louis spending my last days surrounded by family, and I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank each and every one of you for your support.
That's Chaz Littlejohn speaking in a video posted to a GoFundMe campaign. A former contractor with the IRS, Littlejohn made headlines in 2020 by stealing and leaking Trump's tax returns to the New York Times. The paper found, among other things, that Trump maintained a bank account in China, helped his family dodge taxes, and inherited hundreds of millions of dollars from his father. The consequences of leaking Trump's taxes are still playing out for Chaz Littlejohn. Nick Phillips explored that story in a recent piece for St. Louis Magazine, and he joins us now to discuss it with us. Nick, welcome back to St. Louis on the Air.
Thanks for having me.
So, Nick, Trump's taxes, his not releasing his returns, and then they're being revealed. That's one of the stories that was huge at the time, and then it got lost amid other major stories over the years. What is it that got you interested in looking more deeply into this?
What got me interested was learning that Chaz Littlejohn, the man who leaked these documents, was from St. Louis. And I always wonder why people do bad things, why people do illegal things. Oftentimes, what's illegal is also bad. Mm-hmm. And so there's a nice overlap there. In this case, there was no debate about whether what he did was illegal. Mm-hmm. There was some little bit of debate about whether what he did was bad or morally wrong. And so I wanted to get into that debate. And I'll be honest, when I first glanced at this, I thought, oh, this is going to be a story about partisanship gone awry, somebody who got caught up in tribal point scoring and that led him to do something illegal. And I think certainly people on the political right construed it that way. And I think some people on the political left really thought that he was a hero for, mm-hmm. Hurting Trump and revealing how the ultra-wealthy deal with their taxes. But then another story emerges from the court documents, and I'm sure we'll get into that, that he was maybe, according to those who know and love him, maybe more of like a misguided idealist,
right,
who had this really high-minded desire to put information before the public. And he knew, and I think he knew he was going to go to prison. So then the question kind of for me became, was it brave to sacrifice his freedom to give information to the public, or was it foolish to think that the public would care about this? Mm-hmm.
And in order to get a little more insight into that, you reached out directly to Chaz Littlejohn in several letters. So was there anything in particular that you were hoping to learn from direct correspondence with Littlejohn?
I wanted to learn so many things.
Right.
I wanted to learn, I think especially, I wanted to get to where I just mentioned about,
yeah,
like how he looks at this now, like how he thinks about this now. Was it worth it? I really wanted to get there. I also asked him a lot of small details But yeah, as you know, it didn't work out that way.
So he did write back to you, though, and basically said that because of his ongoing legal case, that he couldn't talk with you. So from that point, where did your reporting take you, Nick?
Right. It took me into court records. Mm-hmm. In some criminal cases, there aren't a lot of court records. In this case, there was a fair amount, and also related cases. He was deposed in a civil case related to all this stuff, and it's like 130, 140 pages. Mm-hmm. It was just him answering questions from a lawyer. And that was a treasure trove of information about where his mind was, what he did when, what he was thinking when. And it also had, as I mentioned, those 29 letters from friends and family of his,
right,
who wrote to the judge in his support. And that was actually very interesting. You don't actually get to see the letters themselves. You just see excerpts because the judge allowed their names to be redacted.
And what was it that you gleaned from that information, from those people who knew him?
The same thing that the judge gleaned, mm-hmm, which is that he sounds like a very deeply loyal, intelligent, principled, thoughtful person who worked really hard, who kind of had this view of government as almost like a technician, where he would spend long hours just poring over databases and doing really kind of unglorious, mundane tasks, mm-hmm, to make the IRS work better.
Right.
And it kind of had that view of government that it needed to work well to serve the people. And it really kind of a good government, sort of public, civic-minded attitude.
Mm-hmm. So there is nothing, quote, unquote, sexy about what you discovered then?
No, certainly nothing outrageously partisan or anything like that, that was in the court records, no, mm-hmm, not that I saw.
So we heard from a few listeners who seemed to share Little John's belief, that presidential candidates should share their tax returns, and this is something that we know because of what he did. Tamara wrote, "I believe that taxes are an important part of understanding what motivates candidates, in addition to information on whether there are any potential conflicts of interest." And Anne said, "It's a matter of transparency. And as a candidate, if you are not willing to fulfill these few obligations, then you should not be able to serve." What do you make of those points, Nick?
Well, I think in this case, the information that Chaz leaked to the press resulted in a New York Times investigation that showed that Donald Trump, has these properties. Mar-a-Lago was one, the old post office hotel in Washington, D.C. And the investigation found that, according to these records, 200 companies, business groups, and foreign governments stayed at those places or did events at those places and then subsequently got benefits from Trump and his administration.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, can be construed as a reason, as a conflict of interest, in appearance, if not in fact, that I think voters, would do well to. I mean, that's just not like a really great way to run a government.
Is to have
cronyism, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think something that is important to note is that there is no legal obligation for a candidate or a president, that is, to release tax returns. And we had talked about that in the introduction, that since Richard Nixon, U.S. presidents have shared their tax files. So this expectation, then, that candidates release personal and financial details, what do you think that says about our elections or about American voters?
Well, so that all goes back to the 70s, and stop me if I'm not going where you want me to go here, but the 70s really was when this all came to pass. You had, on one hand, do you remember when Richard Nixon said, I'm not a crook,
yes,
that whole thing? That was not in reference to Watergate. That was in reference to a tax scandal.
Right.
And his income tax returns got leaked to the press and also came out in a court case. And it showed that he had made a lot of money but not paid a lot of income tax.
Mm-hmm.
This was a scandal. So that's what he was referring to. So that happened. In addition to that, people in his administration got their hands on tax returns from his political opponents. All this came out after he went out in a blaze of glory or a blaze of corruption with Watergate. in response to a couple things happened. One, Congress passed a law prohibiting disclosure, unauthorized disclosure of tax, individual tax returns. And two, this norm, not a law, not an obligation, not a requirement, but a norm of presidents, vice presidents, and candidates of those offices, candidates for those offices, voluntarily releasing their tax returns. And it has to do with just letting the public know what kind of entanglements they have, both foreign and domestic. Mm-hmm. And I think that's now. So that's the logic behind it.
Right. Yeah. And I think the background that you're providing is it's an important sort of window into what you were looking at, what you were considering as you were writing this deeply reported piece. But back to Chas Littlejohn and why it is he cared about Trump's taxes in the first place. What is it that you discovered about that?
Right. So there were two leaks that you have to keep in mind. So the first one had to do with Trump, and you know, as we know, Donald Trump refused to release his tax returns. That was a norm that Chas believed should be upheld. There was also a lot of concern at the time. You have to go back in time to remember what was happening. The FBI was investigating whether Trump's campaign had colluded with Russia in the 2016 campaign.
Right.
It was not resolved. No one really knew. It was all in the shadows. Trump then fired the director of the FBI, James Comey. There was rampant speculation on the left that he was trying to conceal financial ties to Russia. So I think Chas did not know what was going to be in Trump's tax returns, but he thought the public had a right to know what was in there. And so he went ahead and leaked that. And then as he was working on that and like helping Times reporters understand that, he noticed that some of the ultra wealthy in the United States had not been, in some years, not been paying any taxes at all. And it was kind of, it went against the spirit of progressive taxation, which is that the rich should pay more into public coffers.
Right. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Nick Phillips, senior editor of St. Louis Magazine and author of the recent deep dive feature, The St. Louis Native Who Leaked Trump's Tax Returns. Now, before the break, Nick, we were talking about why Chas Littlejohn had this interest in or cared about Trump's tax returns. But I'd like to talk now about how this all happened. Take us back to 2017. Chas Littlejohn has been living in Delaware. He's working at the company he founded, an online poker business. What is his plan at this time for stealing Donald Trump's tax returns?
Right. So he was working for a military and government contractor called Booz Allen Hamilton. And he got rehired there. He'd worked there before, but he got rehired there to work on a project to help the IRS basically fine-tune its system for authenticating taxpayers who wanted to look at their own records. Mm. So he was working there, and he knew that by that point, I think he knew that he wanted to steal these returns. The way he did it was, I didn't have this in the story, but the IRS blocks file sharing sites like Dropbox, Google Drive. Mm-hmm. He got around that by basically creating his own private website and uploading data to the website, and then later he would download it to like an iPod, different flash drives, and he got away with it for a long time. I think he did that in 2018, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So over quite a period, he is very deliberately doing this.
He planned it for a long time. And he thought about it for a long time, whether it was the right thing to do.
Right.
When he decided. He also had a lot, you might have a question about this, but he actually also had a lot going on in his life.
Sure.
You know, his father had been diagnosed with an illness. A family friend had also got, I think at that point, a family friend had also gotten ill and died. And also it was just a turbulent time for the country. So he had a lot going on.
Now, just over a year after 2017, he has acquired by this time 15 years of Trump's returns.
Right.
And he leaks this information to the New York Times. What did you learn, Nick, about that particular decision? Why the New York Times?
He went to the Times. He thought about the Wall Street Journal. He thought about...
Was it the Washington Post?
That's right. So he thought about those two. He ultimately went with the Times because they had a team of reporters, Ross Buettner, Sue Craig, and there was a third one, name escapes me right now, and they had already done work on Trump's taxes. They had discovered that, you know, contrary to Trump's story about being a self-made billionaire, where he would say that he got $1 million from his father and then spun that into a billion-dollar empire. They discovered that he had actually gotten, I think, north of $400 million from his parents, and then used that to build his companies. So that's why Chaz was interested in going to the Times, and also he saw there was a documentary made about that story, which, by the way, won a Pulitzer Prize. Chaz saw how careful they were with records. They had this sort of room that was locked, and had. I think maybe they had computers that were not connected to the main server of the Times. They might have had like a closed circuit with those computers. So they're really careful. And Chaz is really adamant that this data be kept, secure and everything.
Right. So the first story then came out on September 27th, 2020.
Right.
And it was a series titled "The President's Taxes: Long Concealed Records Show Trump's Chronic Losses and Years of Tax Avoidance." And you mentioned it was a series that did win a Pulitzer Prize. What did it reveal?
A couple things. Well, actually, a lot of things, but let's talk about a couple.
A couple, yes.
He was very good at leveraging The Apprentice into licensing and endorsement deals, and he made, $500 million just doing that. What he was not really good at doing was owning and running real estate businesses. And I say that because those businesses that he reported a lot of losses with those companies, and then he would take those losses and then use that to shrink his tax liability such that in certain years he was paying zero income tax. And then also it revealed the influence peddling that we were talking about earlier at some of his properties, wherein business groups and companies and foreign governments would come stay at Mar-a-Lago. They'd come stay at the old Post Office Hotel in D.C., and then later they would get benefits from the federal government.
Now, after this, Chaz Littlejohn could have stopped there with Trump's taxes, but he does not do so. And he makes another move and shares a second theft of tax documents with ProPublica. And this leads to the publication of a series called The Secret IRS Files. Now, Nick, you write that this decision to steal even more tax documents after procuring Donald Trump's may have led to Chaz Littlejohn's downfall, his finally being caught. How did the investigators catch him?
Oh, with the first one, they couldn't tell where the leak had come from of Trump's taxes. The second one, you just said the title, The Secret IRS Files.
Right. It was
kind of obvious where the leak came from.
Sure.
That narrowed it down quite a bit. So now investigators kind of knew where to look.
Yeah.
The exact details of the investigation are not known. The federal agents that investigated this would not give an interview to me, but they did start asking. They came to Chaz's house, asked him some questions, became very interested, and over time he eventually confessed.
Right. So in 2023, Chaz Littlejohn is charged for stealing the tax documents. He pleads guilty to one count of unauthorized disclosure of tax documents or tax records, that is, while working as an IRS contractor. And you mentioned that earlier about the fallout sort of what had happened with Richard Nixon back in the 70s. But what is it that stood out to you about the legal case against Chas Littlejohn? I mean, did he explain his own motivations?
Yes. He said, I did this out of a desire to inform the public. As I said, people on the political right just don't buy that. They don't. They think that he was trying to hurt Trump, trying to basically find a way to increase taxes on the rich, that this mm-hmm. was a, you know, partisan point scoring. One thing that was mentioned by conservatives was that, oh my gosh, he stole the records of, was it 6,500 people?
Mm-hmm.
And he pleaded guilty. The DOJ, the Department of Justice, was ready to settle for one count, like a guilty plea of one count. They were kind of, they just couldn't believe it.
Right.
Now, we can get in, we can have a whole discussion about,
sure,
about
sure.
you know, how much danger he is to society and prison and what that does.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people were on the right were very surprised and dismayed at what Senator Rick Scott called a sweetheart deal.
Right. And Rick Scott of Florida, Republican U.S. Senator, he's one person whose tax returns had been stolen and shared with ProPublica. And he is someone who showed up to make a statement at the trial. And he said, "There, quote, there are more victims of this crime that can fit in the courtroom today, all attacked for political purposes because they are wealthy or Republican or both." I mean, to what extent, Nick, do you think Senator Scott has a point? I mean, did you have any sense at all from looking at court documents, in whatever correspondence you had with Chas Littlejohn, or even looking at videos and things he's put out since he's been in prison since May, any sense that it was a political attack on Republicans or Donald Trump?
That, Elaine, I have wrestled with this for a while. It's a really hard question to answer. I wish I could talk to Chas about it. I can imagine, from what I've seen, a principled position wherein he says, look, the consensus of progressive taxation, wherein the rich pay the most mm-hmm. into public coffers, having the ultra-rich avoid taxes at the level that they do does not fit with that spirit. So whether you believe it in or not, it's not working.
Yeah.
So from a good government perspective, Congress should clean that up, close loopholes, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't want to sound naive. I mean, I don't imagine. I mean, I think Chas at one point said that his defense attorney filed a document with the court saying that he believed that Donald Trump was a threat to democracy. That is, I mean, is there a neutral, moderate person who would say, you know, group of people who would say that? Yeah. It's most often her on the left, of course. So, you know, it's hard to say, but I mean, I looked for campaign contributions. I didn't see anything. I think I saw maybe like a $50 donation to Act Blue, like in the middle of the last decade. But I didn't see any just crazy partisanship from him.
Right.
But this is where we are in this era of the United States, where like it's really hard to separate what is partisan from what is just good government.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So Chas Littlejohn's making the impact he wanted to. Was he disappointed that there was not more outrage, or that it essentially got buried in the news cycle because of all of the other stuff that was going on at the time?
I don't know, but what I can tell you is this. He wanted to inform the public, right? Well, in 2017, before any of this happened, the Pew Research Center asked Americans, are you bothered by, you know, by the wealthy not paying their fair share or something like that? 60% of Americans said they were bothered, quote, a lot, mm-hmm. end quote, by certain wealthy people not paying their fair share of income taxes. A few years after all this happened, the number is the same. It's
right.
Still 60% of Americans. So public opinion on this, by that measure, has not changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does he think that maybe over time this will go into the groundwater and, you know, Americans' opinions will change? I don't know. I would love to ask him.
Yeah. For your part, Nick, as we close today, have people's reactions to the story that you've written indicated to you in any way, shape, or form that those revelations about Trump's tax returns or just the way that the tax system works in the United States is something that voters care about right now?
Some readers have written to that effect, yes. Mm-hmm. I'd say more wrote to the effect of, this is not an easy story to evaluate
morally.
And they expressed, I guess, appreciation for the complexity of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it certainly was complex.
Yeah.
Nick Phillips is senior editor of St. Louis Magazine. His deep dive into the story of the St. Louis native who stole and leaked Donald Trump's tax returns is featured in the magazine's latest issue. You can find a link at our website. That's stlonair.show. Nick, thanks so much for coming in to talk with us again today.
You're welcome.
This episode was produced by Danny Wissentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.